ownership of WGCH Radio.
Welcome, everyone. We're back for another episode of Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner here along with my co-host, my brother Mark Pruner. We're both realtors here in Greenwich working for Compass Real Estate. We try to bring you each week the best of our hometown, Greenwich, Connecticut, and what's going on in the world of real estate. Mark, how you doing? How was your weekend?
It was good. I'm looking forward to this special program moderated by Tim Agro on buyers and sellers, and we had a good open house.
How many did you have at the open house?
We had seven groups come through, and the nice thing is people who come out in February are all serious buyers. We did have one neighbor come over, but they were actually looking for a friend of theirs.
Good. Well, take it away, Jim.
Yeah, great. So thanks, both Russ and Mark. Today we have a pretty special episode. We're going to be talking about the buyers and the sellers in the home buying process. So we'll dive right into it. We have a lot to cover today. So to start, Russ, we'll start with you. In getting ready, how do you get your buyers ready?
I think, Jim, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to figure out how much you can afford and make sure that you're looking at the right price range. With the changes in mortgage rates and everything so much, a lot of people, feel they can afford more than they can in today's market. So I think what we do first is try to put them with that financial expert mortgage person and, try to figure out and get them pre-approved for a mortgage so that they're looking in the right price range. And we're able to, help them and usually give them three different people in which, we work with very closely that we think would be good lenders for them.
Great. Thank you. And so going off that slightly, there's all sorts of different ways to get creative on mortgages and time frame on that. Is there anything that you want to talk about specifically when it comes to that?
Yeah, I think one of the things with the mortgage rates rising, although we still haven't seen the short-term rates really come down as quickly as we expected. So, as that does happen, you're going to find that, most people don't live in their first house more than 5 to 7 years. So an alternative might be is to discuss with your mortgage representative about an adjustable rate mortgage or what we call an ARM. And maybe you buy, 5, 7, 10-year rate, which stays fixed for that period, instead of going for a 30-year fixed rate. Those, I think, will come down. And people buying today, as Mark and I did when we bought our first house, we started at 16.5%, and within 9 months, we refinanced down at 10. So I think you're going to see that happening in the market. They're going to get in, buy the house, but then the rates will drop and people will refinance again.
Awesome. Thanks. So now we have Mark, who's going to be representing the seller's perspective of things. So Mark, how does this process, do you want to talk about how you begin this process here?
Sure. So, one of the things you have to do is determine why you're selling. And in a market this hot, one of the things that is unusual, traditionally you didn't want to buy a house before you sold your house, but nowadays you may want to reverse the process so you know you have a place to go. Or for many of our clients, they have second homes that they'll be moving to. But the most important thing to do is to find a good agent. So basically, just call up me at 203-969-7900 or mark.pruner at compass.com. Or Russ, what's your contact info?
At 203-524-4998 or Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, dot Pruner, P-R-U-N-E-R, at compass.com.
Right. So now that you've got a good agent, you want to sit down with your agent and you want to look at a couple of things. One, You want to look at what needs to be done for the house, but two, you want to sign the listing agreement. And the most important thing by far in that listing agreement is what is going to be your initial list price. There's a lot of folks, I would say practically everyone, seems to think that the best philosophy is to list high, and then if it doesn't sell at that high price, is to come down. The problem with that is that what happens is by the time you've come down, your house has already accumulated significant days on market, and when you drop the price, it says a couple of things. One, it was overpriced before. Two, you're not you're willing to negotiate, and you're in a weaker position. It is a lot better to list your house at what you think it's going to sell for, even a little below, if the market is hot enough to generate multiple offers, and then have the house bid up as our type A personalities here in Greenwich compete against each other to make the to get the house. The next step is to declutter and stage the house. And then also you may want to look at any needed repairs and even do a pre-inspection. But if there are things that you know have to be done, such as environmental issues in particular, if you've got an old underground storage tank you've converted from oil to gas, is get rid of it. No attorney is going to allow their buyer to buy a house that has an underground storage tank in it in Greenwich. So you got to get rid of that. You should get rid of any asbestos. And you may want to look at mold and structural issues.
Great. Mark, are there any other type of repairs that may be more cosmetic that you think are worth someone selling their house to do themselves prior to listing?
So one of the issues you have there is you've got an older kitchen. Should you modernize it so that it looks like today's kitchen? I generally tell my clients not to because, one, the seller often wants to do it as inexpensively as possible, and the buyer's just going to go in and rip it out. Two, you want the option for them to do what they want. There are some things like if you have peeling paint or stuff like that. Compass Concierge and other companies have services where they'll give you up to $25,000 on a credit card, and you can spend it for just fixing up your house, painting, trimming trees, moving stuff to storage to declutter the house. So getting it ready for the showing and getting it ready for the photos is the most important thing. And in fact, the day of the photos, the house should look the best it's ever looked.
Great. Awesome. Those are some good information there. So now we'll be switching a little bit back over towards Russ. So Russ, when it gets to this time of the process, you've understood how much your clients can afford. They've worked with the brokers. So they have an idea. What's next? You know, they're coming to Greenwich for the first weekend, and you're preparing to meet them.
You know, Tim, I think especially if they don't know Greenwich, I mean, what I usually do is spend, you know, a quick overview in the office of getting them to know, you know, the various areas of Greenwich, where they're located, where the trains are, where you're going to shop, the schools, so that they've got a feel at least for that. And then take them out in my car and drive them around. And what's important about that is not only do they get a better feel for different areas of Greenwich, what you're able to do during that time is find out really what they don't like more than really what they do like, so that, you know, you can take a map that's 50 square miles, of which Greenwich is, and knock it down to maybe 2, 3, 4 areas that they really feel comfortable in having driven through the neighborhood, you know, with them. The other thing that we try and do is, you know, once we're working with them, is explain to them what the process is going to be like. And then it's very important that we have already brought in the mortgage broker who's pre-approved them. But we also then explain the attorney's role and the inspector's role in the process so that they've got a better understanding of what they're going to do. Then, you know, what we do is, luckily at Compass, we have a thing called collections, which we can then figure out what is the price range that they're going to be looking in, and send them information about those houses. Right now in this market, it's important not only to send active, but to send things that are under contract and sold. And as new things go, come on the market, and also then go to contract and are sold, they can start to get a better idea of what their money can truly buy and all of that. We also urge them, you know, get out in your own car and drive around and get a better feel for the town, really by on the weekends when most of the public open houses are there. What we urge them to do is go to the public open houses and, you know, walk through a couple homes that might be there that, you know, might be or might not be what they're looking for. But that's the way they're able to educate themselves best to what is going to be the best, you know, choice for them down the road in both location and style of house, condition of house, and then verbalize that back to us so that we have a better idea of really what they're looking for. I will tell you from my experience, oftentimes they say buyers are liars, I hate to say it, and the fact that I've sold a lot of homes where people didn't think from the outside that that house was quite right, but we as agents, as we get to know our clients, realize that the interior is really what they're looking for. We can deal with the exterior of the house down the road. So it's really an educational process that we take them through.
Great. Is there I can think of a couple of places in town that I might want to drive someone by, but is there anywhere specific that you think is one of the more impactful areas to show them?
I mean, Real Estate 101 in Greenwich is the first thing you do is put them in their car and take them to probably the most amazing asset that we've got. That's Greenwich Point, and give them an understanding that for $40 a year, they get the right to use a 143-acre park with a beautiful beach, the old Greenwich Yacht Club. You know, you've got the place where they can rent paddle boards and kayaks and sailboats. They can go and fish. They can take friends from, you know, around that they know from New York or wherever they're coming from, and really show them, you know, what Greenwich has to offer, and then really take them through the various areas of town, the old Greenwich area, Riverside, Coscob, each in central Greenwich, each one has its own different style and stuff to it. So we'll see.
All right, great. So we're going to quickly – thank you, Russell, by the way. We're going to quickly hop on a break, and when we get back, we will have Mark talking a little bit about the next step in the process of selling your home.
Rand Insurance has been part of the Greenwich community since 1938, and we're located next to the J House in Riverside. We've been helping successful individuals, families, and local businesses with their insurance needs for over 80 years. Contact the Rand experts for insurance for your home, cars, and business, as well as cyber insurance and coverage for your jewelry, wine collection, and vintage cars. Get in touch with us at 203-637-1006 or at randinsurance.com. Experience the Rand difference.
How long does it take to tackle a home project? With Angie, you could cross it off your list before this ad is over. Just tell us what you need. Indoor or outdoor, repair or redesign, and we handle the rest, sending a top pro to get it done. You don't have to lift a finger, except to tap the screen or click the mouse. Plus, Angie is free to use. So bring us your next home project, and we'll bring it home. Download the app or go to Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com to get started.
Welcome back, everybody, to Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner, and with me, as usual, is my brother, Mark Pruner. Moderating today's thing is our extraordinary protege, Tim Agro, and we're talking a little bit about the buying and selling process and what buyers need to do to get ready and what sellers should be doing to prepare their house for market.
Awesome. Thanks, Russ. So the next segment is going to be pushed over towards Mark, and he's going to continue from where he left off. Just for anyone who may have missed it, the seller's chosen to use him as an agent. They've determined the listing price, they've gotten the house ready, and now they're getting ready to put it on the market.
Yeah, so what you want to do at this stage is, as I said, you need to declutter and stage the house. You want to remove all personal items from the house. And we also have a great diversity of potential buyers. So anything that would – you want to let the buyer see themselves in the house, so you don't want to distract them with things. So as I said, depersonalize the house. You may want to leave one or two family photos just so they can identify with who the owner is, but you don't want the whole refrigerator covered with pictures of the kids, or, you know, pictures of your past athletic triumphs, like some people I know.
Would that be me, Mark?
It's possible, Russ. I understand. Uh-oh. Robin had you put many of those away before. Anyway.
I think I got one left out of all the club championships I won.
Yeah. So the most important thing in today's market are great photos. And you so we as agents carefully guard our photographers, so that we get really good photos up. Because most people, if they're going to Zillow, going to Trulia, will see those photos and make a decision without ever reading the description or without ever doing a lot of other research about the house. It's just, oh, there's a house, boom, 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 first 10 pictures. This looks interesting. Let's go see it. Or would you ever want to live there? No. And as Russ was saying, buyers are liars, which is actually just broker shorthand for saying that buyers can't always articulate exactly what they want in a house. So they'll tell you they want a center hall colonial, and then 4 weeks later they end up buying a contemporary because, as I said, they just can't articulate well exactly what would be attractive to them. So once you've got the photos, and now photos are a lot more than just photos of the rooms. You've got drone photos of the area. You've got videos that can be done either virtual walkthroughs or videos that tell a story. And then you also have the ability to virtually stage the house. So if you've got a house that appeals to younger buyers and it's owned by one of our many seniors like Russ and me, you can put more contemporary furniture in, more contemporary colors on the walls and things like that, and that can go a long way to helping. So now you've got your photos. You'll also have a floor plan, and so you want to roll it out. We upload it to the Greenwich MLS. They send it out to dozens of brokerage firms, hundreds of websites, and everybody can see it. But you also want to coordinate that with a print advertising campaign, because Greenwich is one of the few places where print advertising is still important, and you also want to coordinate a social media campaign. And luckily, social media has kind of come down to four principal areas. You've got Instagram, where videos are great. You've got Twitter, where you can kind of tell a story over a period of time. You've got Facebook. Once again, videos are very useful there. And you've got the other one.
TikTok, maybe?
Yeah, TikTok.
It's another video one.
Yeah, or actually LinkedIn can sometimes be a good source if it's a house that would appeal to that type of business audience. The other thing to think about, I have a background in press relations, so you might think about how some of these houses might fit in the story. If you've got a beautiful high-end house or a waterfront house, or you've got other houses or other features that might be of interest, you've got five fireplaces, you've got a nine-car garage, as we recently had. Those are stories that the press is looking to cover, so you can do that. And then one of the last things is key box or not. If it's over $2.5-3 million, no key box. All the showings are done by the agent. In today's hot market, you know, a realtor open house, a public open house, and back-to-back showings, you don't really need a key box. But if the house isn't that popular, it's an older house that needs work, you can put a key box on it, and that way when buyer's agents are out there and they pull up to a house and the buyer goes, I would never look at this house, they can look at the list that hopefully all of us keep as to what's available on key box, make a quick call, and take their clients over there without having to coordinate everything. That's particularly useful for vacant houses.
Mark, yeah, real quick, going on this, it sounds like you guys, you know, put together an awesome plan to sell the house. Just for some of the sellers who might be curious, how do you kind of help them plan this out in advance so that they can schedule places to be during these showings, these open houses? You know, are you guys able to schedule stuff in advance or book it on?
Yeah, so generally for sellers, the way showings are done is we get a phone call from another agent who says, I'd like to show it tomorrow at 2:00. We call up the seller and say, can we do tomorrow at 2:00? And they say, no, the baby's down at that time. How about we do it 4:00? And so there's often a little negotiation back and forth. We work that out. We meet the buyer and their agent over the house to point out the best features. And it's a something, as I said, sometimes you get a call, say, hey, I'm in the driveway of your house. Can I show it now? And if it's occupied, and that's one of the things we check with the sellers is, when are you at work? When can we show it without a problem? So that's one of the important things. First year in the business, somebody called up. I was doing desk duty, and they said, "Can we see this house?" I looked at the book. It said it was vacant, and what they didn't, what the owner told the listing agent, but not in the book, was that their daughter was there that weekend. So the people walk in. They're looking around the first floor. The daughter is upstairs taking a bath. So we do our best to avoid those situations.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you. So then the last thing before we move over to Russ, just giving you a little warning, Russ, is the realtor and the public open house, right? So you've gotten everything ready for that. You want to just quickly explain kind of how you prep those and make the most of that time that you're having buyers in the home?
Yeah. So the realtor's open house often defines the marketing calendar. What happens is west of the Mianus River, realtor open houses are done on Tuesdays. East of it, they're done on Thursdays. And so if you're in backcountry, they go from 10 to 12:30. If you're below the post road, it goes from 12 to 2 on Tuesdays. And we have Koskob in those areas are done. I'm sorry, excuse me. It's North Street that's the dividing line, not the Mianus River. That's the dividing line between 10 to 12:30 and 11 to 1:30. And so you have those – the photos go up the day before the realtor open house, and then you schedule a public open house on Sunday traditionally between 12 and 4. It's often 1 to 4, 1 to 2, stuff like that. And so the buyer or the seller needs to have a place to go, hopefully if they have family in the area. Now the library is back over and COVID's over, they often head to the library. And then we text or call the seller when everything's all done.
Great. Awesome. Thank you for that recap there. Russ, we're going to be coming over to you. So I'm just going to quickly give you the situation. You mentioned giving your buyers the tour of town. You've set them up with a collection, and they've gone and seen a bunch of homes with you, and they've decided on one that they want to put a offer in. So what is that? What's the next step for them? How are you going to help them?
Well, I think some of the things we do is, and it's really, really important in this market right now, is that we try to look at comparable homes and see what other things might have sold. It's really important right now that we look at things that are probably have sold no more than 6 months ago because of the rising interest rates in the market throughout 2022 from roughly March into the end of July, early August, that, you know, the market and pricing has changed from what the really hot market was back in the first quarter of last year. So it's important that we look at those. To give you an idea, there have been 261 sales in Greenwich from August of last year till the end of January this year. And to give you an idea, 49% of those basically sold or 50% less than asking price. But of those that sold for less than asking price, they probably, the average was about anywhere from 2 to 4%. It didn't go much more than that, where historic negotiations have been closer to 6 to 8%. So, you know, it's important that they understand that. You know, we're looking at only about 16% have sold it at asking price. And then we had 91 of those 261, or 30, a third of the market, basically sold above asking price. And those are the ones that most of the time got in multiple bid situations. To give the people an idea, we do track the average price that things usually go over asking price in a multiple office situation. And during that period of about 6 months, it's been about 8% over the ask. Although recently I've seen them go even higher than 8%. But it's really trying to work with them to find out, you know, what they think it's worth. It's a waste of time for a buyer and a seller to try to do a lowball offer in this market, just because, and that's going to be 10%+ off the asking price, just because, you know, the market is efficient enough and understands that what a lowball offer is. You can put it in, but don't expect to get much back. I think also the buyers have been sort of conditioned now that something's going to sell very close to asking price or above, 2-3% below, maybe as much as 8-15% above the ask price. So I think you would do is coach them on, you know, what their offer should be and, you know, look at those comps that are from there. The other thing I think is really important in this competitive market today is that the buyer have as clean an offer as they can. Clean meaning as few contingencies as possible. So case in point, some are going without inspections if the house seems to be in really good shape. Most people, if they can, I would say above, especially $2 million, maybe are going with no financing contingencies. They've already done the work that we've worked with them on to get pre-approved for mortgage. They might then include a pre-approval letter with their offer just to show that they've done that kind of work. But also it's our job to figure out, you know, what does a seller want from like a closing price and how quickly do we need to, if there are inspections, how quickly can we do those? And hopefully we've got the inspector lined up, ready to go quickly. And, you know, lastly, how quick are you going to sign a contract and put 10% the normal deposit down on a house when you sign the contract? And that's usually as fast as the seller's attorney can draw the contract, get it to the buyer's attorney, and they can do their due diligence on the title of the property and making sure that there are no hiccups that could happen, from outstanding building permits to work that's been done that wasn't permitted and other things of that nature. But, you know, all of that needs to be done, hopefully prior to any offer being made, so that you don't have problems down the road.
Great. Sounds like a lot of things you want to make sure you keep your buyers up to date with and aware of in an ever-changing market like this. Depending on how long that buyer's process is, you think that you might have to change your strategies?
Yeah, a little bit. You've got to be prepared. You've got to get everybody in line and do that up front, so that when you do decide to make that offer, which we're seeing a lot of those offers are coming in, usually a house might be listed right before the public are with a broker open house, then they'll do a lot of showings the first couple of days it's on the market. They'll do public open house over that weekend, and then you get ready to possibly be in a multiple bid situation. Although we are seeing some sellers right now, if the offer is good enough from one of the people that make the offer, they might accept that and make everybody else a backup offer for a buyer if the buyers are willing to do that.
Awesome. So I'm going to pivot over to Mark again, and he is back in the seller's perspective for anyone just tuning in. And we are going to discuss once he's received your offer. So,
So actually, first, a step before that, if they're a good agent, they're likely to call me and tell me my client's thinking about making an offer. And so you need to talk to my client, the seller, and see what information they're comfortable releasing, because the quicker we can get to a final amount and final terms, the better off we are. If the two parties start too far apart, it's much less likely that they'll ultimately come together somewhere in the middle. So, I'm going to let the buyer's agent know whether my client wants an extended closing or a quick closing. If it's a vacant house, usually the sooner the better, so they don't have to continue paying mortgages and taxes. If it's someone who's lived there a lot of time, they may want more time to get the house ready. So offer comes back, obviously, meeting what the buyer's needs are, and I want to look and see just how solid that offer is. So one of the things that some agents don't do, which I think is always a mistake, is not put in who the buyers are. They just tell you, here's the amount, here's when we want to close. There, you've got a fair amount of uncertainty. So I want to nail down who the offerer is, what kind of evidence the buyer's agent's willing to share is how likely they'll be able to go through. Oh, they just sold their house. The school year is starting. I know that's a motivated buyer with the cash. Then the question, as Russ mentioned, are contingencies. Is there a mortgage contingency? And when there's a mortgage contingency, I want to see how likely it is they are to get that mortgage. So the offer should come with a letter from the bank, and ideally that mortgage contingency says it's underwritten pre-approved, which meant that the buyers have gone all the way through the process, and all they need is an appraisal to get the so that the bank will agree to do the mortgage. On the other hand, you can say, oh, well, the buyer's agent may say, well, as soon as we have accepted offer or a contract, we'll go apply for a mortgage. I know that buyer is probably looking at a 30 to 45 day process to get approved. And then the other thing, and we used to hardly ever see this, now it's becoming more common, though not as much as it was last year during what we called the frenzy, is buyers removing the inspection contingency. If there's no mortgage contingency and no inspection contingency, and we're pretty sure that we've got that they can actually have the financial means, that's a good solid offer. And let's say they bid $2 million, someone else comes in with a mortgage contingency and an inspection contingency, which I think everybody should do unless it's a gut job or a teardown or a brand new construction. I'm going to advise my buyer they need to be north of 2.25 versus a $2 million cash offer before those are comparable offers. So the more certain that the offer is, so then we need to come up with a counteroffer. If it's a lowball offer, a lot of sellers will say, I'm not going to counter that. And then the buyer may or may not walk away. So I always recommending countering, even if you only come down $20,000. Just to get the other people to see if they'll come up and know what you really want. You always want to keep the folks engaged. on the multiple offer situation, if you're in that ideal situation, as the seller will send out a set of rules. When do they have to be in? Where do you send them? And just an overview of what the process will be. As Russ said, we may have the ideal offer. They're closing when we want to. There's no mortgage contingency. All they have to do is do an inspection, and they're ready to go. So in that situation, and they're also 10% higher than anybody else. In that situation, you know, grab it when you can. I was in a situation about 5 years ago where the highest, I was representing the seller, the highest offer refused to participate in a multiple bid situation, and they would have gotten it had they simply renewed their offer in the multiple bid situation. So once you do that, you get to the accepted offer, and we'll talk about what you do on that next. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back with the inspection, the contract, and the closing.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I'm in the medical field, and I think when you start out these things, you know, everything from the advertisement sounds so good that you're psyched up for it to work. It's working. Anyway, I'm happy.
Balance of Nature has made a big difference. It's just one of the greatest products, and it's just so simple, and it works.
Balance of Nature is a fantastic product. You could tell it's real. You could taste it. And it gives you really good energy, and it's just right up there with rent, electric, cable, like things that you have to have. I'm not cutting Balance of Nature. No, I love it.
Start your journey to better health with Balance of Nature right now. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com for more information or to place your order. Shipping is always free. And don't forget to get 35% off your first order as a preferred customer by using discount code Laura.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner. With me, as usual, is my brother, Mark Pruner, and moderating the thing today is Tim Agro. We've been talking a little bit about the home buying and selling process and, you know, what buyers and sellers need to do and a little bit better understanding of what the process is all about.
Yeah, great. So, Russ, you're actually going to be up again here. So, this little segment is going to be on the home inspection, whether or not you should include one or not in the offer. And then if you do include one, the process of choosing the correct inspector and attending it and going through it. So if you wouldn't want to, you know, give us a little insight on that.
Yeah, it's in a hot market like this, oftentimes you won't have inspections, but more than not, we're seeing that sellers are going with inspections. Normally, the person that who achieved the accepted offer, which is really only a verbal acceptance. The only time a buyer and seller know that they've got a real deal is when we get to the contract and both have signed, and we'll talk about more of that in a moment. But to inspect or not inspect, I really feel that it's important that a buyer get the chance to go through the inspection process, just because if there is anything that's drastic that could cause them from buying the house, I think they need to know it, but it's going to be a stronger offer without those. You know, pick an inspector. We do as we do with the mortgage people, is give them three names of inspectors that we know do a great job. And, then they contact them, set up the times, usually very quickly after the accepted offer, in many cases the next day or a couple of days later. And we go with them, along with the inspector, to the house, and then have them go, the inspectors go through the house, looking at exterior situations as well as interior and mechanical. You know, the only things I think are really important that are, you know, could keep a buyer from buying is the mechanical, environmental, or structural problems that might be with the house. those, no matter who the buyer is in the process, is going to, you know, find the same thing. So it's best that the seller, if they already didn't identify those in a pre-inspection process, they should be willing to work with them on a roof issue, mechanical issues, a radon issue, oil tank or something like that. Those are things that any buyer is going to want corrected prior to them purchasing the property.
Great.
You know, and then after it's done, you know, what you really want to do is figure out and get a hard copy of the inspection. Most inspectors today will give that to the buyer within 24 hours of the inspection being done. But it's really important that a buyer be at the inspection so that they can see for themselves. The thing that buyers need to understand, and sellers too, is that the inspector's not there to find out what's good about the house. They're there to find out if there are any defects that could cause a buyer from not buying the property, or at least understand that, you know, to fix them, it's really not that expensive to do. You know, once those are done, they can either ask that the seller correct them, or what we usually do is look at getting a credit for those things and try to quantify what they are by bringing a professional in to give us a quote on something to do with a hot water heater or a furnace or air conditioning or something like that, a roof, and then ask for an appropriate credit. The reason for that is the buyer's going to do it and can control the process. The seller's going to do it as inexpensively as possible, and you don't really know, you know, how that was done or anything there. But from that, if the seller's willing to give a credit, then and all the other terms from the accepted offer are acceptable for both parties, then we finalize the terms and then talk about the contract.
Awesome. Mark, is there anything else you'd want to talk about on the seller side of the inspections before we move on to the contract? I am trying to keep us on a time frame.
Sure. So, yeah, so we're frequently after the inspection, the buyer will make up a list of things that they want the seller to fix. As Russ said, if it's an environmental issue in the way of underground storage tanks that may have leaked or asbestos, particularly because of the environmental laws, the seller wants to do that so that they know that it was done. The last thing they want is a buyer to not remove the asbestos in the basement, and all of a sudden somebody has asbestosis, and under the CERCLA laws, you're still in the chain of liability for that. So you want to get rid of that before. But the in a hot market, they may come back with nothing, which is obviously fine, or only the major things. But as of the 140 houses we have on the market right now, 90 of them have been on for more than 2 months. And if you represent as a seller agent one of those houses, it's you just can't say, no, we're not fixing that. You want to work out a way, and if you can come up with a guideline as to things that you're going to fix, such as, you know, we'll fix anything that's not general wear and tear that you couldn't see. So when they walked in, they saw that the roof was older and there were some shingles missing. We're not going to replace the roof for that. But if it turns out that back behind something, there was some termites, then that would be reasonable for that the buyer had no way of knowing. That would be reasonable for the seller to fix. But having guidelines. But at the end of the day, as Russ said, you all want it to come down to a number. You generally don't want the seller to fix something, and then the buyer comes in and says you didn't fix it, and now the question is, are they in breach of contract? And you get into this whole second level of disputes. So cash solves all problems.
Yes. Let's dive into the contract, actually. So Russ, we'll have you start here. It's the contract phase, and you're helping out your buyer. What's the next step after you've gotten through the inspections and the finalizations of that?
Yeah, normally what we do, Tim, is we'll then, again, recommend three attorneys that we know are very good in town that do residential real estate closings all the time. Oftentimes we have that already set up before we get to this phase, but, you know, that's very important. You know, then that attorney is going to wait for the seller's attorney to draw the contract. Once the contract is drawn, it goes to the buyer's attorney. Buyer's attorney is going to put on a rider to that, which is going to ask the seller to make certain representations about the house that they only they know, having lived in the house for some time. Along with that, they'll probably have made, if the house is built pre-1978, a lead paint disclosure and a property disclosure form that they has been filled out by the seller. They give them basic representations about the house themselves. You know, once the attorney has done the title and checked all the municipal departments that everything's okay, then normally what will happen is they will then review the contract with the buyer, make sure that they're happy with all the terms. The buyer will sign the contract and then give a 10% deposit for a down payment on the property.
Great. Thanks, Russ. And Mark, you know, obviously some of that stuff was back and forth with the attorneys, but, you know, where do you find that it's the most important to stay on top of when you're representing the seller in this?
Yeah, so a couple of things on that. I for about 10 years, I was a real estate attorney. And in general, once it goes to the contract negotiation, it's best if the agent stay out of it, because otherwise you end up with a six-way negotiation. And it just ends up with a lot of crosstalk, which can complicate the situation. So the seller frequently already has an attorney that they've worked with in town. They did the closing for them, but maybe that closing was 30 years ago and that attorney's been retired for 20 years. So we want to work with the seller early in the process, because the seller is going to be drafting the attorney or drafting the contract, and they will put a seller's rider on it. In Fairfield County, there is the Fairfield County Bar Association contract, which is done for practically all contracts to buy and sell real estate here. So everybody knows what that contract is, so they go right to the seller's representations, which are usually fairly minor. They'll get the buyer's representations back, which also may make some modifications to the standard contract. And there may be things that the seller doesn't want to represent to. For example, that there are no encroachments from neighboring properties. And the problem is there may be stuff along your property lines, and you don't know whether – particularly on larger lots, if it's back in the woods, is that shed encroaching on your property from the neighbor's property? So you don't want to represent stuff that you don't have actual knowledge of. The other thing that you have when you sign the original listing agreement, Connecticut has a property disclosure form. And what's interesting is in New York, the attorneys tell them never to sign them. In Connecticut, if the seller doesn't sign the property disclosure form, I've got a big concern as to, if I'm representing the buyer, as to why they wouldn't do that. So you want to go through. Well, interestingly enough, that is a situation where you could say unknown on a lot of the things, and it generally isn't that big of an issue. Once you've negotiated the disclosure back and forth, then you want to make sure that things like the closing date and all that, and surprisingly, you want to make sure that you read the contract that comes back. You just don't go, oh, that's it, and sign it. Because with today's effort, sometimes a prior version gets slipped in, but so it's going to come back. Usually you go into your attorney's office. Nowadays it can also be done by email and electronic signature. And So review the contract, sign it. Your attorney will hold that 10% down payment in escrow and until closing.
All right, so we're going to have to go quick here, Russ. We're going to give you the two-minute drill. You're representing your buyers for the closing, and we're right at the home stretch here. What's the last few things that come into play here with the walkthrough and the rest of the closing process?
Yeah, during the day of the contract, probably an hour or two before the closing, you're going to do a final walkthrough just to make sure all the inclusions in the contract are there and that the house is in similar condition to what it was at the time that you saw it during the inspections. If there are any things that need to be done, you'll check on those. You'll then meet with your attorney, review the mortgage documents, and sign those. You'll then transfer the money from the buyer's attorney to the seller's attorney, and provided everything's in good shape, you'll then go and your attorney will record any releases and deeds that need to be recorded.
Awesome. Thanks. And Mark, on the seller side.
So on the seller side, as closing is approaching, if there are any requirements that you make repairs, you want to get those receipts over. If it's an underground storage tank, you want to get the environmental report showing that the tank didn't leak, or if it unfortunately did leak, that all the soil has been properly removed and sent to a certified landfill, and that afterwards it was tested again and showed no oil. The nice things to do if you're the seller is you want to get together all the manuals about the appliances and the furnaces and the air conditioners and all that, and stick them. Usually, either leave them on the kitchen counter or stick them in a drawer, and you want to just make sure that. That your requirement is to deliver the house broom clean, which means that you have to remove all of the personal property, anything that can be picked up. If a mirror is screwed to the wall, it's part of the real estate. You've got to leave it. If it is hanging on a wire, it's personal property, and you've got to take it with you. There frequently are disputes over what's in the garage. The owner thinks that they're doing a favor by leaving the half-open bags of fertilizer and the roof tiles. The buyer says, no, I want a broom-clean house. So you want to – anything you're planning on leaving, you want to resolve before the closing date. And so for the – you'll also nowadays pre-sign the deed, which will be held in escrow for your attorney – and also a title affidavit that no work has been done on the house or what work has been done, so there are no mechanics minutes or material men's liens. Then on the day of the closing, you receive the money. What's interesting these days is who actually gets how the keys are transferred. It used to be keys were transferred at the closing table with the sellers and the buyers. Now frequently I, as the seller's agent, will hold the key until I get an email from the attorney that it's okay, that the money has been received, that closing has happened, and I can deliver the keys over. So that's the whole process.
Awesome. If anyone has any questions, you know, they can reach us at greenwichstreets.com or Mark, Russ, or I's contact. Just Google us. We're there. Anything, any final thoughts?
No. You got a new house or a lot of money.
Exactly. We thank everybody for listening. If you'd like more information about the buyer and seller process, go to GreenwichStreets.com, and what we just talked about is waiting there for you. Have a great time, everybody, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Greenwich Streets. We thank you for listening in.
This is your community radio station serving Lower Fairfield County.